Welcome to another edition of the Skyhook Podcast. My name is James Kay, and with me, as always, your co-host, Chris Pennett. Chris, man, we are two games into the season. It seems like it's happening so fast. I feel like I say that every time, but it just feels like it's coming at us at light speed here. How are you doing just a couple games into the 2021 campaign?
To all the young aspiring journalists out there, save your bread early before you start work, and do not try and do this while you have a day job, because running up on those media availabilities in the middle of work will drive you nuts. But otherwise, I'm doing great.
Oh my God. Every time I go into a media availability now, I just keep looking at my phone waiting for my boss to email me saying, stop tweeting during the work hours here. Like, I feel like I'm going to get sniped one of these days. But hey, today, joining us for the first time since 2019, you know him from the Double Down WNBA podcast, his work at Swish Appeal and Hashtag Basketball. I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up your 8-plus beard game. But Eric Nemchuk, thank you for joining us on the show, man. How you doing?
I'm good, James. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for the beard compliment. Those always go a long way.
It's glorious, man. I can never get it in. So I'm jealous. But, you know, I think we've already established this already multiple times now. But look, we're two games into this season and we're recording this on May 20th. The Sky have started off 2-0. You know, just at the top of this, let's just go over just our first impressions. Nothing solidified. Again, only two games into this 32-game marathon, but let's recap it so far. The Sky beat the Mystics 70-56 in the season opener. A lot of hype around Candace Parker's WNBA debut, and she did not disappoint. And the Sky also hung on to beat the Dream yesterday after almost blowing an 18-point lead at the half. So, Eric, let's start with you. Even with how many injuries this team has endured already, and James Wade sort of monitoring the minutes of some of his veterans, is there anything that has just stuck out to you so far for this team this season?
Well, it's difficult to say because, you know, they're in a pretty bad spot already because of injuries and absences and stuff like that. So I think a couple things that I'd kind of want to talk about. One is that I think their transition offense has been really good. Mm-hmm. Of course, you'd expect that from, you know, those. We're going to be seeing a bunch of touchdown passes from Candace Parker to Kalia Copper, you know. That's been awesome. Their half-court offense, on the other hand, is a work in progress, I think. You've seen – this is two games straight now where they started off really, really strong at the start of a game. And then after halftime, they just kind of never really got going, you know. And in both the Mystics and the Dream games – I think in the Mystics game, it was just sluggish offense. And then the Dream game, like the Dream totally changed up how they were defending the Sky, and they created a lot of turnovers. So it's hard for me to make a snap judgment on how this team is doing because so many key pieces are already out, which kind of stinks. But I mean, at the end of the day, they're 2-0 in some pretty, you know, unfavorable circumstances. So I'm pleased.
I'm glad you brought up the half-court offense because that's also something that kind of stuck out to me. I'm not too worried about this team in the first after these first two games. I know it's been a little bit ugly in that, like, again, those half-court sets have been a little bit wild for this guy. But over the last two seasons as well, they are a pretty good team in, like, our offensive unit in the half-court. I believe, according to Synergy, I believe they ranked like second in the league in points per possession in 2019 in the half court and third last season. So I think eventually it's going to come around. And once this team is back to full strength, I think that we're going to see them click a little bit more on that end. But Chris, how about you? Is there anything that you want to respond to with Eric's first evaluation there? Is there anything that you want to add?
He's right on the money. It's funny, Brittany Boyd Jones was waived, obviously, to make room for Shiloh Hill. But outside of the turnovers that she had, and that's something that you need to limit if you want to be a point guard that sticks on a roster in the WNBA, I thought that she fit really well into their offense and their defense. She had a great pass off of a Stephanie Watts block in yesterday's game, where she just – it was an immediate hit ahead to Diamond, who then found – I believe it was Kalia cutting to the rim, and she finished with yet another and one. We're going to need to keep track of Kalia Copper and ones this season because she has the hang time to be able to either elevate through contact and finish, or just when other players are heading back to the ground, she's still up in the air. So we're going to need to keep track of that in the statistical markers all season long. But I think I want to see how Diamond progresses, because all indications, right, both from the team and from just what we could see on social media, it seemed like she was pretty much back from her injury last season. And maybe that was a bit optimistic, because it's not that she's not running well. She looks to be running pretty well. It's not that she's not able to elevate, maybe. That I think we haven't really seen that high-flying Diamond that we're used to from 2018 and 2019. And so she's been struggling with her shot a bit. She hit that shot, but got a really, really lucky shooter's roll to kind of close the door on Atlanta. But I've liked what I've seen from her defensively, especially one-on-one defense at the perimeter. She had a nice defensive stand against, I want to say, Kennedy Carter that led to a fast break. But it's still something to watch, because Diamond, like I said, James, in our last show, was one of the players that I was looking to really break out this season, really be the beneficiary of that Candace Parker playmaking. And it's been Kalia Copper. And that's not a knock. Those two are inseparable. But we're still waiting to see Diamond show the flashes of where she was in 2019.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point to bring up. And honestly, I think if Diamond was on this call right now, I think she would say that her jumper is looking a little bit flat right now. And it kind of makes sense if you think about it, though, right? Like, she hasn't played meaningful basketball consistently since 2019, depending on how you look at it. I know she played a little bit last season, but to see Diamond DeShields at full strength, for her to be able to be unleashed and do what, I mean, she's someone that really relies on her athleticism to make the most out of her, to make the most out of her offensive skill set. So it makes sense to me that she started off a little bit cold. I'm not too worried about Diamond. I think that she's in a really good situation coming off of an injury where she can now, you know, she doesn't have to be the number one scoring option on the team every single night. And I think that this is a really good position for her to be in. But Eric, let's talk a little bit about Diamond. What have you seen from her? Is there anything that has stuck out to you that's been positive, even despite some of the offensive numbers not looking as crisp as she probably wants to be?
You know, I agree with Chris. It just seems like there's something a little off about Diamond's game. I want to just say that the game is just moving a little too quickly for her right now. It seems like she's kind of going a little too fast, making decisions too quickly. Particularly, you know, when she, it seems like she has in her mind before she shoots that she's going to shoot. I mean, she has made a couple nice passes, like dump off passes to a Stu and Dufall, mm-hmm. You know, like in midair, stuff that only really like athletes of her caliber can make. But I think offensively, you know, her mid-range shot just isn't there. Actually, the mid-range shot hasn't been there for this guy at all, which is, I think it'll come around, but it's been a little frustrating so far. I think she just needs to stop thinking and start playing. You know, a player like her with her athleticism and her reflexes, it's a large part of the game is mental, I think. And you said it, James, she hasn't really, you know, she departed the bubble after a frustrating half season, and she hasn't really played pro basketball since then. So I think it's going to be a matter of just getting her legs underneath her again, and then also kind of letting the game come to her, kind of like Kalia Copper has done.
100%. I mean, we should just talk about it right now. I mean, her rise in this league has been, it's been amazing, honestly. It's been awesome, yeah. You know, like right now, I'm just pulling up the numbers. Like, she's averaging 21 points per game. She's shooting 51.7% from the field. She's getting to the line 6.5 times per game, and she's shooting 84.6% from the charity stripe. I mean, that is just a major improvement. I thought she was going to be closer to her numbers in 2020 with, you know, with how much talent is on this team. And I thought that maybe we could see her minutes go down. I just didn't expect her to play more than 31 minutes a game like she did last season. But no, she's been even more productive, even more efficient in playing less minutes. I think she's averaging like 27 minutes per game right now. And she's already one of the top scorers in the WNBA. I mean, this is something that has been, I think a lot of Skytown has been really impressed with and excited about. Eric, when the Sky acquired her in 2017, did you see this from her? Like, did you expect her to get to this level of all-star level production?
Maybe not an expectation, but I wouldn't have ruled it out. Like, I was a big fan of Kalia Copper in college. I thought the Mystics got a really good player when they drafted her, just because of how, you know, there's athleticism and then there's explosiveness, and she is explosive. She's like totally unrelenting in transition. Like, you could play her 38 minutes and she'll still be going 100% in the last 2 minutes. I'm totally envious of her conditioning. But also the level she's taken, you know, with her mid-range game, it seems like the game has really slowed down for her a lot, and she's making better decisions with the basketball. It just looks like she's a whole lot more confident, you know? And that can do wonders for a player like that. Going back to your question, I was really high on Copper's potential, so maybe I could see her reaching this level eventually, but the leap she's taken, given the opportunity that she's had in the past two seasons. Cause like, think about if Diamond never got hurt last year, would we see this version of Kalia Copper now? I don't know. So she did a really good job of just seizing the moment last year and then not resting on her laurels and just taking that next step again this season. I think that's really encouraging.
Chris, what have you seen from Kalia Copper that makes you think that this is something we should expect from her moving forward?
Well, everybody getting out of the bubble has changed things, and it's apparent. Most everybody's conditioning is better for the people who didn't have to recover from injury. And when you talked about the mid-range game, Eric, it really hasn't been there for the Sky yet, and their three-pointers haven't really been falling either. Now, some of that is Allie Quigley being out for the second game. Astu actually hit the only tray that the Sky tallied on Wednesday. But what they have been able to do is score at the rim and score on the paint. And that is a huge part of her game when she's successful, when she's scoring at the rim and at the paint. And it's hard to really categorize for me. Mm-hmm. Relentless is a good way to put it. I hadn't thought about that word, Eric, and that's a great way to put it. When she's coming downhill, it puts so much pressure on the defense and forces them to make tough decisions. When the Sky are at their best, they can either just let Kalia Copper go, find a pass at the rim if she needs it, or they get her going and the defense can collapse in the half court and then kick out to an open shooter or find an open shooter or find somebody who's coming off of a double team like Ruthie or Stu or even Courtney Vandersloot if she slips off of her player. It's just difficult for teams to guard. It's just incredibly difficult for teams to guard. They haven't played a team who has somebody who can consistently stay in front of her, even Ariel Powers. And that's, Natasha Cloud. And that's saying a lot.
Definitely. I mean, look, please tell me if I'm being crazy right now, but there are times where I just think that the Sky's best half-court offensive weapon is Kalia Copper. And I say that it's not even just coming off of this season. I feel like you could say that even dating back to last season. I mean, even to use the most recent example with the Dream, when the lead was dwindling and everyone looked flustered by the Dream's pressure on the perimeter in the second half, and the only person that was able to navigate it was Kalia Copper, you know? So she's someone that's just so smooth getting to the rim. And again, just dating back to 2019, she's just been one of the most valuable members of the offensive unit because she gets to the line more than most players on the Sky. And like you said, Eric, she's become a real threat from mid-range, and we're seeing that this season. I mean, again, she's shooting over 51% from the field this year. So, I mean, again, she's still a two-level scorer. Like, she still hasn't quite figured it out from beyond the arc, even though she did improve on that last season. But, you know, if there is, like, one takeaway I'm going to take seriously coming out of the first two games, I do think it's that Kalia Copper has all-star level talent. And for this team, especially this year, she's kind of indispensable. And I think that a lot of people wouldn't have necessarily have said that. I mean that like outside perspectives, you didn't follow this team in the way that all three of us did last season, especially. I think a lot of people would have thought we were crazy for saying something like that. And even suggesting that Kalia shouldn't start over Allie Quigley or close, I should say, over Allie Quigley, because I think that's a real conversation now. And I know Allie's been really open to the idea about adapting, maybe not like, again, not closing for this team, even though she's a three-time All-Star. But I think it's a real conversation now, like how the Sky are going to make that work and making sure everyone is fed on the offensive end. Eric, do you see that as a problem at all? Or do you think that this, it kind of just makes sense that Kalia Copper should be closing for this team down the stretch?
No, I don't think it's a problem at all. It's, if it is a problem, it's a good problem because that, well, yeah, you know, it means you have options. It means you have options. You know, you're not forced to go with one player because Quigley, you know, even in her age, she still has very obvious strengths and Kalia has very obvious strengths. So at very worst, you know, Wade did this last year. He wasn't afraid to bench Quigley in certain matchups down the stretch because he wanted Copper in there, you know, for athleticism and defense. Not saying Copper is like a lockdown defender or anything, but, you know, if Quigley's on the floor, they're going to be attacking her every single time down the floor. Copper, maybe not so much. I don't think it's a problem at all because if you think about it, where did Quigley really take off in her career? Coming off the bench.
Yeah.
So, and she doesn't have the skill set either. Like, she's not a ball dominant guard. She's not a guard who needs to get a ton of shots up in order to be effective. She just needs to be out there and move without the ball and provide that off ball gravity for her teammates to excel at what they do. So she's going to be effective no matter what, like in what situation. So I actually like this because it shows that the coaching staff has that much more confidence in Kalia Copper, you know?
100%. And I think that one of the things that James Wade has established so far with his time with this guy is that he's not afraid to bench anyone. It doesn't matter if it's Courtney Vandersloot down to the last person on the roster. Now, of course, we're not going to see Courtney Vandersloot being benched anytime soon, but he is willing to empower players this way, where I think even Ruthie said it last night, where she knows that she comes prepared every game because she knows that she can get action at any point. James will do anything to like find a mismatch, and he'll utilize every player on his roster. And I think we have to credit that to a certain extent too for how Kalia has really come out and again turned her, like, she's just seemed like she was ready from day one. So that has been a really positive sign for the Sky. But the other thing that I wanted to talk with you guys about, the backup point guard position. I think, again, two games in, the Sky have Stephanie Watts right now really taking over that lead role in leading the second unit, I'd say. And even though that Brittany Boyd-Jones, who was waived by the team today, now that she's gone and we're going to be expecting Shyla Heal to make her debut pretty soon with the Sky, I do think this is still a little bit of a question mark. Eric, let's start with you. How are you feeling about the Sky's backup point guard situation? Do you believe that Shyla Heal is the answer for this team in that role this season?
Boy, James, I haven't felt good about that in years. But, I'm just being honest. Like, you saw how bad it was last year. Like, they could not afford to take Vandersloot off the court.
Yeah,
I think it will be better this season. You know, they got off to a little bit of a rough start with, you know, Heal not being able to show up right away and Boyd with the turnovers and all that stuff. But I think Heal... The thing I like about Heal in this role is that she's already got so much professional experience. Yes, she's very young, but I know one of the reasons Wade really liked her was because she's already got that experience playing down in Australia in the pros against people like Leilani Mitchell, Liz Cambage, other Australian players who WNBA fans are familiar with. And she's also got international experience, mm-hmm. which, you know, that's a completely different game, but it's still professional basketball kind of at a different level. So she's seen a heck of a lot more than I think other point guards that they could have drafted, you know, from the NCAA would have. And maybe it'll translate immediately. Maybe it won't. I mean, point guard is an awfully difficult position to learn, especially if you're a 19-year-old coming in the middle of a WNBA regular season. But she has, I think, the pedigree. She's kind of been molded by the Australian national. Like, they were really high on her down there. They mm-hmm. think she's the next big thing. And that's a pretty strong program. That's a pretty strong national program there in Australia. So I'm just going to trust the people who are getting paid a lot of money to make these decisions. But yeah, I'm fairly confident that backup point guard will not be nearly as much of an issue as it has been in the previous few seasons.
I mean, it can't get any worse, you know. Like last season, I think the difference in the Sky's net rating was something crazy.
It was atrocious. Yeah,
like over 27. Like, ooh, that's a tough one to overcome. But Chris, I'm kind of curious because we haven't had a chance to talk about this as well. You know, I thought that Stephanie Watts had moments in the last game where she looked okay, but I think there were moments where I was thinking, man, if this team had someone like Lexi Brown, who had such a great training camp and preseason, taking, like, honestly, just a veteran in this role, that this team would have been a lot better off going against the Dream last night. Do you feel that Stephanie Watts can kind of figure out this role as Shiloh kind of works her way back and or works her way into this guy's rotation?
I've liked what I've seen from Stephanie Watts so far, especially on defense. Coach James Wade really said the same. He echoed, and you can see her defensive reads and her help defense especially has been very good. Offensively, I haven't seen much. I don't know if they've really brought her in to be a force or a major factor on the offensive end. But defensively, I like what she's done. Like I said, she had a couple of stops at the rim against Atlanta, and that led to fast breaks. That's all that I'm looking for from Stephanie Watts, honestly. I think with her and Natasha Mack, the Sky are really looking for defensive help. Natasha Mack, maybe a few more, some more touches on the offensive end, but Ruthie Hebert's really filling that spot. And you can see that double-double that she had the other night. Ruthie has. And Coach Wade said that she was still getting used to game speed, but she looked like the Ruthie we saw down in Bradenton on pick and rolls and at the rim. Yeah, I know, right? So I think in terms of what Stephanie Watts brings, you're not going to see anything from that secondary playmaking spot. So I'm waiting for Shiloh Hill like everybody else. I agree wholeheartedly with Eric. The Opals have been solid and produced so much professional talent. From the players who were Leilani Mitchell, Penny Taylor, Liz Cambage, of course, Stephanie Talbot. She has a lot, and just, you know, her dad as well, Shane, who is a bona fide shooter in his own right. She has had so many sources to learn from and mold her game. So I want to see where she is if she gets in on Sunday. I doubt that she'll get any time against Sabrina. But, I mean, the Liberty already have their own kind of backup point guard situation to worry about. So she might have a chance to show out early on.
I know, and I think the audience will kill me if I say this one more time, because I think I've said it 100 times now. But I'm kind of with both of you. I'm just higher on Shiloh Hill than I think a lot of other people are, just because of, again, she's been playing professional basketball since she was 14 years old. I think that means something for a team like this guy that need – they kind of need a veteran presence, but again, they can just kind of get, maybe they're just looking at Shiloh as she's already holding herself to that veteran standard almost. I think that's going to be really interesting. But Eric, in terms of managing her early on, would you just throw her into the fire and be like, you know what, figure this out. We have we're kind of looking to peak later on in the season. We want to make sure that Azaree Stevens, who has yet to play this season, we want to make sure that she's healthy. We want to make sure that Candace, who, again, she twisted her ankle. Apparently it was a mild injury, and that's nothing that we should really worry about necessarily. But, you know, she's 35. I think Allie Quigley turns 35 or 36 this season as well. I mean, you have some vets that you have to look out for. Do you think that you just kind of let the young ones kind of go wild and just see how Shiloh Hill looks in just early on, just again, just throwing her into the fire? Or would you want to see her kind of progress, like only getting a few minutes early on and then try to ramp it up a little bit more as the season progresses?
That's a good question. I think there are two positives to this scenario. One, as long as Courtney Vandersloot is on this team, you're not going to need to worry about your backup point guard playing a ton of minutes, no matter who it is. Because Sloot's good for at least 30 minutes a game, maybe 32, something like that. So you can afford to bring Hill along. And Sloot's tough. She's tough. She's in great shape. She's no spring chicken either, but I wouldn't worry about, you know, quote-unquote load managing her as much as I would Quigley or Candace Parker. But speaking of Candace Parker, the other cool thing about having her on the team is, I mean, one of the thousands of cool things of having her on the team is that she's a darn good playmaker herself.
Yeah.
So you could theoretically afford to, if Vandersloot is sitting, run your offense through Candace Parker and kind of stagger your lineups a little bit and maybe just have Heal kind of get her feet wet. Like, she could be in the game, but she wouldn't have to be, you know, processing too much information too early because you have a veteran championship winning playmaker in Candace Parker. So, you know, and I think the other thing you have to consider is they didn't just bring in Heal just for this season. Mm-hmm. No, they drafted her for the future as well. So if it depends on like what their outlook is, if they really are grooming Heal to be like the next point guard of the future after Vandersloot, I know it's tough to think about, but that's decisions that need to be made. I think it would behoove them to just kind of bring her along slowly because, you know, what's the rush? That's kind of my take on it.
I think you could argue either side of this, honestly. I mean, I also think she's a little bit more pro ready too. Then I think that she has a couple of things that she can do. She has that step back jumper from beyond the arc that I think translates immediately to the WNBA. It's so quick. And I think people are, I mean, just to have one move in your back pocket that you can turn to early on as you try to adjust to the talent level of the WNBA, I think that really helps her early on. And also, I think she moves off the ball pretty well from the few games that I've watched on YouTube. You know, she's someone that doesn't play like she's 19. And I think that, again, you can go either way. You can have Candace Parker take over some more playmaking duties and balance it with Shawa Heal's development. But Chris, how do you feel about this? Because we haven't really talked too much about it. Do you think that this guy should ease Shyla in, or since she hasn't had a training camp or a preseason to go through, that this might be the best experience for a rookie to just be, you know, put out there for 10 minutes a game and see how she does?
Well, it's kind of like we keep talking about, right? She's not a true rookie in that sense. It's I don't know if you can go with 10 minutes a game because she'll have some bumps. It's going to be different speed. International is just different speed than the WNBA. But if you start, say, 6-7, just get a couple of minutes a half or a couple of minutes a quarter. Say 2 minutes a quarter, that's 8 minutes. And you might not even get that depending on how the rotations go in the first and the third quarter and at the close of a game. So you get her 6 to 8 minutes a game just to start the first couple of weeks, and this guy have the benefit of having long breaks between at least their first few games. So you have time for practice. You have time to get those training camp bumps and nicks out of the way that she would have had she been able to come over for the regular training camp. So I think they're going to take it a little bit slowly, but they're still going to treat her like she's got professional experience because it would be a disservice to her and the team otherwise.
Yeah, no, for sure. And again, I trust James Wade with handling this situation. He had an entire offseason, a WNBA offseason, to evaluate the situation. And I know that he had no idea that she would be dealing with these visa problems, where he probably envisioned her having a training camp to be able to learn his system that involves a lot of like concise movement and a certain level of precision that is important for anyone in that system to, like, if they're going to be successful, you need to be able to know what you're doing out there a little bit. So I think that Shyla, I could see him going in either direction with that, honestly. But I want to talk about a familiar face. Chris, you talked a little bit about it before the show as well. Just a Stu Du Fall. Stu Du Fall. I got to remember that she added that to her last name, Fall. You know, she has looked really solid for this team so far. And Chris, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about her role this season. How have you felt just having her back in the fold, especially on that cheap veterans minimum that a lot of people are still talking about after that disastrous Dallas Wings contract?
It's so funny. I was unhappy to see a Stu go last year when they let go of Dallas. And even with the way that things panned out with the abbreviated season and the bubble, it was still so odd to see her on the bench for Dallas, even knowing that they had brought in Katie Lou Samuelson, and they had Iz Harrison to play the middle, we'd seen what Astu could do, right? We'd seen what kind of player she could be in a team's rotation. A floor-stretching big at 6'5", with a lot of length, who's good on help side, and can defend all but like the brawniest centers, right? And yet here she, there she was playing 5 minutes a night for Dallas when she got in games. And I was never really afraid that she had lost something or there was something that she didn't have. It was just like, well, something must be going wrong. You must not be managing her. And then Astu comes back and just charts a double-double in her second game. And it's like, you put a fish back in the water, well, the fish is going to swim. That's all it's been. This is Astu's ocean here in Chicago. I'm sure that there's other teams who could have utilized her in a similar manner, but it just didn't happen in Dallas. And that's their fault. So she got back here with James Wade, who she's used to. She's back with players that she's used to. She's back in a system with a team that she's used to. And she's succeeding because she has been put in a position to succeed and because she's a consummate professional. You ask her in post games what's going right, how she chooses to attack. And she, it's not boilerplate, but it's also just, you know, what you would expect to say. Atlanta was undersized. We knew that they were going to crash the offensive boards. So it was on me and the other bigs to crash the boards and get in a position where we could use our size to create mismatches and get scores the way we wanted. That's exactly what she said. And that's exactly what she did. She didn't talk specifically about that ridiculous turnaround jump shot she had in the lane at the close of the shot clock, but that's another thing Astu brings to the table. That's why I'm so glad she's back. I really am. I don't mean to be over the top. I'm happy to have Astu back on the team.
Totally. I mean, I think there were a lot of people out there too that were a little bit, not after she signed that, again, the veterans minimum there, I think that a lot of people thought that was a great value, but when Annie Constable of the Chicago Sun-Times reported that her, Ruthie Hebert, and Ezra Stevens were locks, I think the Ezra and Ruthie, we had an idea that they were going to be locks to make the roster. But when people said Astu's coming back and she's 100% going to be on the roster, I think there were people out there that were a little miffed by that because it meant that Natasha Mack wasn't going to have a solidified spot in the roster as well. And I think clearly they made the right decision having Astu back and again, she's been so important to this team already where Natasha Mack, I have got nothing but good things to say about her. I think she's going to be a really solid defensive player in this league, but you know, she looks like a rookie right now, you know, and for this guy to get the value pick at her at 16 and then make the decision to roll the dice and waive her to make you know, to make sure that they're just focusing on this short-term window. I think it's already paying dividends because Astu has looked fantastic and any team in this league could have had her. And she's really showing that she is closer to that. Honestly, they're showing that Dallas made the mistake of letting her go. But again, I don't even know what Dallas is doing right now, what direction they're trying to go. So they continue to be an enigma. Eric, how have you felt about Astu coming back, and did you also like the move to keep her on the roster and again kind of sacrifice the future a little bit in not in letting Natasha Mack go, which is something we might see again later this season?
First of all, Chris, I love the passion you have for Astu's game. I think she's really cool, and it's really awesome to me when people effusively praise like lesser known players like that, because they have been getting the work done, and Astu Dufall has been getting the work done. Her game against Atlanta, I think in particular, was awesome. Got a double double, three blocks, only one turnover, which for that game was pretty good. But yeah, like Astu, Chris said, she is the consummate professional. And one of the good things about having her in the lineup, I think, or on the roster rather, they didn't bring her in to start, but it just so happened, you know, circumstances, she is starting now. And playing a significant role. James, would you be comfortable having Natasha Mack coming in and playing 30 minutes a game right away against Atlanta like that?
No.
Yeah. So, and you mentioned it too. You mentioned like that they're obviously trying to win now. There's this championship window. And the thing is with Astu, like she's a known quantity by now. And we've seen her have the greatest success of her WNBA career in Chicago before. So it's obvious there's a good relationship there, especially considering like she came over, you know, she's had history of maybe not, not showing up every WNBA season, but ever since this guy got her, ever since James Wade has been coaching this guy, she's been consistent and showing up. So the obvious are on good terms, which you can't, that's not nothing, you know? And she just comes in, she plays whatever role you ask of her. The rebounding has been awesome. The defense, as Chris mentioned, has been pretty good. She doesn't take any bad shots.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's not about the shots you take, it's about the shots that you don't take. Mm-hmm. Astudillo plays very much within herself. And I think on a team that is looking, you know, sometimes there's just no margin for error. Like last night, like the other night against Atlanta. She played fairly mistake-free basketball, I'd say. And it's when you're so shorthanded like this, that's pretty important. So I'm all for Astudillo fall. I'm a big fan of her game. I'm a big fan of her as a person. And thanks, Dallas.
No, man, you're totally right. And one of the things that this team clearly needs in this moment, as they are just without bodies, is that steadiness that she brings. I think that we've seen the Sky be a little trigger happy so far this season, where everything just feels a little bit frantic in a way that when she's on the floor, and you saw how the poise that she had at the end of the game, when the Fever or when the Dream are just pounding the Sky, they're getting all these looks in transition. Kennedy Carter and Courtney Williams are playing the best basketball they've played in the WNBA, arguably. I know Courtney Williams has a long track record of being fantastic, but I think that what we saw from her yesterday was super impressive and some of the best basketball I've seen from her. When you have a team like this just piling on and your lead is losing, just to have someone as steady as Astudillo, I mean, it was clearly the difference between the Sky losing that game and kind of giving in and them coming out and starting the season 2-0. I mean, I don't know if it's that much of a different podcast if we're talking about this team 2-0 versus 1-1, but mentally, I think that there's an edge there that you feel good going against a hot Liberty team who has just looked fantastic this season, by the way. Going into that third game, there's just that level of confidence that you can have going in 2-0. And the Sky are not 2-0 without Astudillo. So, Chris, what else do you want to talk about? Because, I mean, there's just so many storylines that we can go over, and we don't want to take up too much of Eric's time.
Well, I think it is a different podcast if they do lose, because it was the same story against the more difficult team. Coach Wade got hot at me when I asked a very poorly worded question, because he seemed more relaxed, whereas in the past he would talk about cleaning up mistakes. He just seemed more keyed and focused on exactly what those mistakes were. And like, we're going to clean it up. We'll be ready for the next game. We're going to clean it up. We'll be ready for the next game. And I don't know where it came from or led to, but he was saying that, you know, we're not going to give away everything that we have in the locker room to you, meaning the media, or maybe just me. Maybe he just meant me. But if they lose that game, because of the fact that Courtney Williams and Kennedy Carter are just fire starters, then there's more questions about losing leads in the third quarter, coming out unprepared in the third quarter, even without the players that they had. Because it happened in game one with those players. Candace Parker was on the floor when they let the lead slip in the third quarter when the offense stalled out. They didn't score their first basket until under a minute and a half left in the third quarter on Saturday. On yesterday, they just went cold, and Atlanta heated up incredibly, incredibly quickly, and they just sustained that. The Liberty aren't finals contenders. Neither is Atlanta, neither is Washington, but we know the personnel that the Liberty have. But Nyjah Laney is on a similar trajectory as Kalia Copper, and she, along with Sabrina, are filling up the basket. Kylie Shook isn't an all-world defensive center, but she's going to alter shots at the rim, and they're going to have the way that the Sky played. You can bet that the Liberty are going to try and pack the paint to take away some of those layup opportunities. So if they build a lead, they have to keep the lead. They have to find a way to make shots and run the half-court offense. And so if they lose, then there's more questions about that. The fact that they won, the fact that they were able to get some continue playing good defense. They played pretty solid defense so far. And they found a way to make shots in the half court and get transition opportunities still. Is the difference between being 1-1 and 2-0, but also the difference between looking forward to the game and knowing what you have to correct and being a little bit less and being maybe more on edge about what needs to be corrected. There's one or two fewer questions that they need to ask themselves because they won.
Man, I totally get that. I just, when you don't have Candace Parker in that second game, someone that they've really have made a focal point in that offense. I mean, I think it was really interesting to see how much Courtney Vandersloot was working off of the ball in the first game, which is something we're probably going to have to get used to. Like, we're not going to see her average 10 assists a game like she did last season. And I think the sky actually might be better for it. But again, when you don't have Candace Parker, you don't have Azaree Stevens, Allie Quigley, you know, being limited in that first game and then not even playing at all in the second one, I kind of just feel that we're going to learn more about this team. And maybe this is kind of a stupid thing to say, but like, we're going to learn more about this team in game 16 or 18 than we are going to learn in these first couple of games, just because I think we'll understand the identity more of this team and at the halfway point more than we understand it now, just because, again, those are really valuable players, and especially not having Azaree Stevens, who's going to give that defense a lift. Even though I thought in the first game they played pretty solid defense, there was a lot of open shots that the Mystics just missed. So I think that kind of contributed to them only scoring, I mean, for the Sky only giving up 56 points. I think that probably wasn't talked about enough. But I think that once you see this team come around a little bit more, and I think that Courtney Vandersloot is probably shaking off a little bit of, or just trying to adjust again after being in overseas for so long, it's hard for me to really lambast this team right now, you know, just because they're still trying to figure it out. But actually, Eric, how do you feel about them right now? I mean, any response to what me and Chris just talked about?
Yeah, I think Chris is right to be a little tentative right now. I mean, you are too, because you're right. They're missing four key rotation players. That's very significant. But the one thing that you mentioned that I wanted to kind of talk about a little bit is the outside shots against the Mystics. The Mystics missed a ton of wide open threes. They were 4 for 30 or something like that. My God, if they make a few more of those threes, maybe this is a different podcast. If Atlanta doesn't shoot 12 for 24 on free throws,
true,
this is a different podcast, right? So, I mean, you can play that game all day long. You can look at this stat and that stat and say the Sky are 2-0, but I'm gonna keep it real here. Some tough love, all right? We're expecting this team to compete for a championship, right? You can't be going out here and scoring 20 points and a half against the Mystics if you're going to win a championship. The play's got to get better. I don't care who is on the floor. You can't be turning the ball over 24 times in a game. You can't be, having these really long droughts or totally failing against a full court press for an entire 20 minutes. You're going to be facing better teams than the Mystics in the Dream pretty soon. And if those are the teams that you're going to be facing in the playoffs, well, you got to see some development here. Although I will give them a little bit of a break, because I think specifically offensively, you're coming from a year or several years actually, in which they're used to Courtney Vandersloot kind of dominating the basketball and just being the lone playmaker on the team. And now you've got two of them in Sloot and Parker. So I think, at least pertaining to the half court offense, you're going to see some grinding of gears for a few games. So they just try to get chemistry with each other and people coming and going from overseas and injuries, and that's not going to help either. But I think bottom line is, yes, you got a couple wins, but there are also some things that you need to address before you compete against the really good teams in this league. The Sky haven't won anything yet. You know, they might've won free agency, but they haven't won, the championship yet. So I think we have to be realistic with our expectations and kind of follow this guy's progress in these little individual areas before we can really say they're a true contender.
I agree. Sorry to jump in, James, but I agree. Anybody can be champions of the offseason any year. We've seen that in many other sports with a lot of teams. And they finished the year, either they didn't make the playoffs or they underwhelmed when they got to the postseason. So I think it's the same. You've got to clean these things up. And there are, you know, hindsight is 20/20, sure, but Eric, you're exactly right. They had two teams, they played two teams who had abysmal shooting nights in two significant areas. I still can't believe that, one, that the Sky got 36 foul shots in a game that was a final margin of 8 points.
Yeah.
And that Atlanta missed half of theirs. I think that's something that I forgot to touch on. This is a team that finished dead last in free throw rate and average free throw attempts, trips to the free throw line per game last year. And they've had a bit of a tough time at maximizing their foul shot opportunities, as many field goal attempts as they get off. And this year, they are far and away leading the league. Some of that, again, is the fact that they are getting to the rim so much and putting a lot of pressure on the defense. But still, that is an area that we didn't really talk about. And that's where the Diamond DeShields, who has been their leading foul shooter in terms of free throw attempts since she's been on the team, really. And she hasn't gotten as many nearly as we're used to.
Yeah, she didn't even go to the free throw line in the first game, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe, yeah, no, she didn't. So, no, I'm with you guys in terms of, like, this team needs to crack down on a lot of things. Like, there's no reason why this team should have given up 28 points to the Dream in the third quarter. Just, and I say that because I am thoroughly perplexed by what the Dream are doing in their half-court sets. I really have no idea what they're thinking.
Too.
Yeah, no, but seriously, like, what is this three-guard rotation that they have going on right now? Maybe it's going to look better that the Tiffany Hayes is back, but man, I really don't understand what they're doing because there's no off-ball movement. There's just three players standing around while someone rolls to the basket, like screens and rolls to the basket, and they just kind of hope that the defense falls apart, you know? Like, I really don't know what they're doing there, and they're scoring – all like it's going to call like come all in transition. And the Sky really, like, again, 24 turnovers, like they really gave that one away. Like they almost gave it away by just letting the Dream run amok in transition when that's the only way in which the Dream are going to score because of how they just don't really have any idea what they're doing on in their half court sets. It really, like, just even like not even just this past game, like the game against the Sun, man, I really don't know what that team is going to do. I think that we have to kind of really think about, like, a lot of people were higher on the Dream than I was going into this season, but I think a lot of people are going to have to rethink that what their outlook is moving forward. But guys, we're approaching the hour mark, so I'm just curious. We have a game coming up this Sunday, I believe. Is it Sunday? I think it's Sunday.
Sunday, first home game of the season. Yep, Sunday, yep. Sunday, yes. Sunday.
Oh, I would die to be at Wintrust for that. But actually, Eric, are you going to be at Wintrust?
I am.
Oh, my God. That's so exciting. Is everything – have you gotten any news about what is – like what you're going to be limited by, or like are concessions open? Like, yeah. I'm just trying to think about how this works.
Well, they actually just told us today, they sent out an email saying, yes, concessions will be in limited capacity or something like that. And like, that's cool and everything. But like for us specifically, we have to, there's a designated bathroom for us to use. We can't mingle around the arena. There's no re-entry. We have to take a COVID test prior to the game. It's like a rapid test, but that's still like 20 minutes. So I got to get there super early, but man, I'm just, I don't care. Just do whatever it takes to get me into the arena, you know?
Well, I think Candace will be back too. I mean, will that be the – how many times have you had a chance to see her live?
I don't know, maybe like 7, 8, something like it. Maybe more than that. I don't know. I count up all the times that the Sparks have visited this guy since 2012 when you have your answer.
For sure.
But the first time that she's on the correct team, we'll put it that way, right?
Yeah. Well, heading into that matchup, I mean, this Liberty team is for real, man. Oh my God. I just love Lainey so much now. It's been incredible to see like what she's been able to do this season as well. Instead of just going through a full on breakdown of the Liberty, we can't do that again after we had Miles Ulrich on last, last pod, and he gave us the break. We did like 15 minutes on the Liberty. So I'll veer away from that, but who do you think wins the Sky's, the home opener? There it is. Who do you think comes out on top?
Well, it depends. Are the Sky going to be running out seven players again, or?
Let's assume that Candace is back. And okay. I think that Allie Quigley is also, I think that James Wade said that also wasn't a serious injury, and that he's going to continue to preach that they're going to manage the veterans' minutes early on so that they're not peaking at the wrong time, to use his words.
Okay, yeah, I agree. I think that's a good approach. I think if Parker and Quigley are both back, I think this guy can win. The thing about the Liberty is this is why I talk about the three-point shots against Washington. You know the Liberty have some shooters, and they've got some people who can score. You can't be allowing 30 three-pointers to go up against the Liberty, because then you might have a problem there. So I think it's going to be a good game. I'm really excited to watch this Liberty team because, as you said, they are so exciting to watch. It's the talent upgrade from last year to this year for them has just been remarkable. It's been very significant. But, yeah, really looking forward to it. And let's go, Sky.
Chris, how about you? Who do you think comes out on top in this in the Sky's home opener?
Well, it's interesting because the Liberty are going to screen for Sabrina a lot, and they have Sammy Wickham who can just chill in the corner if they want to. So like Eric said, they have a lot of three-point shooters, and that's, you know, not even – that's not mentioning Nigel Laney, which you have to mention, but Nigel Laney now, she's a bona fide. And the Sky have been very committed to blitzing the ball handler. And not switching necessarily pick and rolls. They're overplaying over screens a lot. And I don't know if that was just particular to Washington and Atlanta, but you know, if you see it something through two games, you kind of think that that's their mission defensively. And I don't know how well that'll work against a team like the Liberty who have an adept passer like Sabrina. Adept is putting it mildly. So I really want to see what happens with that. But if they have their full team back, they should be able to overwhelm the Liberty. And it is, especially if they're shooting well. If they can get a few three-pointers to fall and really start moving, I think that makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, they're really impressive. That wasn't just like what we saw in the first three games of the season so far from them. I was super impressed. Like Sammy Wickham has been such a great fit for them so far. And I do believe that Natasha Howard is coming back for this team now. I think that I forget who reported it, but I think that she is back with this team now. So I think that's an interesting wrinkle heading into Sunday as well, as if she's going to be on the floor. I think that the Sky can pull this one out. And the Liberty also haven't really faced someone like a Stu Du in the paint so far this year, you know, or like, and maybe if Candace Parker's back, I think that she could really eat up that, like the small ball Liberty team that we've seen, like, I think that could potentially have trouble now that they're facing someone with the legit front court now. But, and I apologize to the Indiana Fever fans, because I know that everyone wants to crown Tierra McCowan as the next big, you know, the best WNBA big out there, one of the risers there. But it's been that those Indiana Fever still continue to perplex me. But Eric, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Is there anything that you want to add or plug before we wrap this up?
You know, James, you did a great job of plugging my stuff beforehand. So in case I forgot, I wouldn't have to do it myself. But as long as you prompted me, yeah, I'm still writing for Swish Appeal. We're doing season-long WNBA coverage as always. Hashtag basketball. There's some stuff in the works about, you know, fantasy basketball, doing some fantasy basketball tools, which includes, of course, daily fantasy like FanDuel. So keep an eye out for that. I'm really excited to be starting that up. And then our podcast, of course, Double Down WNBA. That's our Twitter handle with my good friend Stephen Trinkwald. You have to like stats and like deep dives into the analytics to enjoy our podcast. So maybe not for everybody, but we work hard. We work diligently. We have a good attention to detail, I feel like. So it's worth the hour if you can put yourself through it. So, but yeah, thanks again so much for having me on, guys. I'm always down to talk Sky Hoops, and let's get a dub on Sunday.
One quick thing before we let you go.
Okay.
I just love Steven, like hearing Steven on the podcast And then hearing, and then seeing his Twitter presence, because if you were to tell me those were completely different people, I would believe you. I love him so much. He's such a such a good follow. If you don't follow him, definitely
he's got a, Steven's got a really good sense of humor, but like on the podcast, you should see his notes. Like he always, we have like a shared Google Doc, you know, for our notes. So we know like everyone's on the same page or what have you. The Google Doc is always at like 15 pages or something like that, because he takes such meticulous notes. Like he's always on Synergy and Basketball Reference and WNBA stats, looking up all this information. So he works really, really hard. And the podcast was his idea. So I give him all the flowers. I'm just there, you know?
No, but yeah, no. You guys, seriously, it's a great podcast. I highly recommend it to anyone. You. Yeah, I seriously subscribe to Double Down WNBA, because it's a great product that you guys have put together, and you should be proud of it.
Appreciate it, James.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Skyhook Podcast. If you want to reach out to us, please do. We would love to hear from you. Our mailbag is theskyhookmailbag@gmail.com. One more time. That is theskyhookmailbag@gmail.com. And we're also on social media. We're trying to build our presence there a little bit more. On Twitter, you can find us at Skyhookin, which is spelled exactly how it sounds, SKYHOOKIN. And we're also now on Instagram. We're going to be sharing highlights from previous games, press conference sound bites, and much more. So definitely check us out there. Our handle is the Skyhook Pod. We really appreciate your support. We would love it if you rated and reviewed our podcast wherever you get them. Right now we're on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So we, again, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the Skyhook, and until next time.